Since he finds out where they've sent me, that they'll call and try to get me to go somewhere else. I do appreciate very much this invitation. Thank those who are involved in planning this lectureship for giving me this opportunity. Normally, when the lectureship falls, I find myself in India. That's about the time that I normally try to make my trips to India. But when Emmanuel called me and asked me would I be interested in dealing with this topic, it was something that I felt I wanted to do. It wasn't something I felt I was capable of doing, but it was something I felt I wanted to do. And so I told him I would, and I made my plans then to go to India earlier this year, which I've already done. It is an important topic, I believe, facing or dealing with terminal illness. The Bible says, man who is born of woman is a few days and full of trouble. He comes forth like a flower and fades away. He flees like a shadow and does not continue. Now those words were spoken by God's faithful servant Job. And even though those words were spoken at a time when Job was dealing with a great deal of tragedy in his life, it seems to me that those words are still basically true for this world in which we live. That our time here is a few days, and that quite often our time here is full of trouble. Sickness is simply an issue that runs throughout the Bible. We read of Naaman fighting the disease of leprosy. We read of the death of David's newborn child. We read of Job being covered with boils from head to toe. We come to the New Testament and we read of Timothy and Epaphroditus and Trophimus and others who were sick. We hear Paul tell the Corinthians that the outward man is made so that it will eventually decay, 2 Corinthians 4, 16 and following. The Hebrew writer makes it plain that man is destined to die, Hebrews 9, 27. It's appointed unto man once to die. And so suffering and afflictions are unfortunately very much a part of this world. And unfortunately, there are things that must be endured by both the Christian and the non-Christian. And because this is true, I think that there are some basic truths that I just want to state quickly, and then I want to move into some things that I hope will help us as we think about terminal illness. First, as I've already stated, sickness and dying are indeed a part of this life. And if we hope to deal successfully and face successfully terminal illness, we have to be prepared to accept that truth. That's just something we have to accept. Second, sickness and dying are not respecters of persons. I believe Luke chapter 16 teaches this in a powerful way as we read about Lazarus and the rich man. While their lifestyles were miles apart, and while the rich man, I would assume, meant more to society than the poor man did, they still both died. Job, a faithful servant, had terrible tragedy in his life. As I mentioned, David had a newborn child die, and Jesus Christ, of course, was crucified. In order for us to deal with terminal illness, especially within our families, I believe it's vital that we get beyond the idea that it cannot or should not happen to us or to someone that we love. Third, we need to understand that sickness, sin, and faith are not necessarily related. Now, while all death could ultimately be traced back to the sin that was committed in the garden, it is not the case that all sickness and death today are a direct result of an individual's sin, or a lack of faith on their part, or the part of those that love them. Now, I think all of us understand the fact that it can be. Just recently in our part of the country, a young man was flying down the road on a motorcycle, and from what I understand, had been drinking pretty heavily prior to that. And they conducted his funeral a few weeks ago. Well, sin was involved in that tragedy. We read a lot about drug abuse and how it destroys the physical body. We read and hear so much that we become tired of hearing about AIDS. But you see, all of that involves sin. And so sickness and tragedy and those things can be directly related to sin, but it's not always the case that it is. And we need to understand that. We need to understand that people can come down with terrible diseases and terrible sicknesses that have nothing to do with sin in their life or a lack of faith on their part or the part of those that care about them. Fourth, sickness, especially terminal illness and death, can raise a lot of difficult questions concerning God, the goodness of God, concerning death and the afterlife, and many other issues. And if we're going to face effectively terminal illness, we have to come to grips with some of these issues in our minds And then if we're going to help others, we need to be prepared to discuss them with those who are struggling with these issues in their life. And then fifth, in dealing with those who are terminally ill, the Christian must demonstrate care and compassion. I believe Jesus Christ set the example for us by repeatedly demonstrating during his earthly ministry that he had a genuine compassion for those who were sick. Paul told the Romans that they needed to rejoice with those that rejoice and to weep with those that weep, Romans 12:15. Now what I want to do in the rest of my time this morning is I would like to just offer some practical suggestions that I hope will help us as we deal with those who are terminally ill. And I openly confess this morning that I am not writing as an expert in medicine or medical technology. I am not writing or speaking as an expert on death and dying. I'm not a psychologist. I've not even had any training in how to deal with the terminally ill. The things that I'm going to suggest this morning are purely things that I have learned as a result of having to deal with those who were terminally ill. And as I began this, I said that I really wanted to deliver this lesson when Emmanuel asked me, but I wasn't sure that I was capable. And the reason I wasn't sure that I was capable is the fact that this lesson took on a very personal note for me due to the fact that on March 24th of this year, one of the finest men that I've ever known and one of my dearest friends passed from this life. That man was my father. And from the moment that the doctor informed us that my father had lung cancer to the morning when I sat beside his bed and held his hand and watched him take his last breath almost 2 years later, I found myself dealing with the problem of terminal illness on a level that I had never dealt with it before. It had now become very personal to me. And really, for the first time in my life, I was being challenged to see if whether or not the things that I had told others over the years were things that I truly believed myself. And so what I offer to you this morning are my own experiences, my own observations, and some things that I know to be true because they are found in the Word of God. Now, as you look in the book and as you see the order that these things appear, the order is not significant. These are things that I jotted down immediately after my father's death. In fact, I looked last night to see, and it was 3 days after my father's death that I sat down, probably the day of his funeral, really, that I sat down and outlined what I'm going to say today. I didn't look at it again for months because I didn't feel like it. But the things I'm going to say are some things that were important to me as I dealt on a very personal level with terminal illness and some things that I hope will be beneficial this morning. I really hope that what I have to say will be helpful to our preacher students. I hope it'll be helpful to young preachers. I had only been preaching full-time for about 2 weeks when I got a call in the middle of the night saying, "Steve, you need to come to the hospital. The father of Sister So-and-so is about to die." I was panicked. I don't mind telling you that. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I was scared to death as to what I was going to do when I got there. Fortunately, I got through it. But as Denver pointed out, you're going to face this. It doesn't matter if you're a preacher or not, you're going to face it. And so I hope that some of the things I have to say will help those of us who are trying to preach. I hope it'll help all of us as Christians. I hope it'll help those of us who will find ourselves facing this before our lives are over. Now, I'm going to do something in this lesson that I don't normally do, and that is I'm going to do a lot and use a lot of very personal illustrations. When I was in preaching school, we were asked by one of our teachers to evaluate a preacher that we would have the chance to hear that coming week. And I was very hard on the man that I listened to. And one of the things that I was very hard on him about was the fact that he told too many personal stories. You know, he just personal story after personal story in his lesson. I was really hard on him when I evaluated him. To this same teacher, a few days later, I had to turn in an extended manuscript of a sermon I'd like to preach. And when I got it back, he had written in big red letters, 46 times you used the personal pronoun I. And then he wrote, "And you're the one who was so critical, aren't you?" I've attempted to remember that, and I've attempted not to take my time in teaching others, talking about personal stories, but I need to do that in this lesson because I hope it will illustrate what I'm trying to say. Let me begin by saying, in dealing with the terminally ill, it is important that we accept the fact that they are indeed terminally ill. Now, in this lesson, I'm talking about dealings that we may have with those that we know, or at least we believe, have little chance of surviving the disease that has attacked their body. I'm talking about those who have been told that there is nothing else that can be done for them and that it's only a matter of time before death takes them. And beloved, I believe with all of my heart that if we refuse to accept that, if we refuse to acknowledge that reality, then I believe we find it difficult, if not impossible, to deal with those who are terminally ill. And I believe we certainly will not be in a position to think about what is best and most helpful for them. Because if we do not accept it, I believe we won't think about what it is that makes them comfortable. I believe that we personally may not finalize some things that we need to finalize. We may not allow them to finalize some things they need to finalize because we simply are not willing to accept the fact that this is going to happen. And so we kind of just ignore it, and we try not to deal with it, and we try not to talk about it, and we try to do things for them that maybe really is more of a hindrance to them than it is a help because we simply won't accept the fact that they are indeed terminally ill. With my father, I had to come to grips with this probably 3 times. The day he had his biopsy, the doctor came in and said, "Your father has a cancerous tumor in his lung. It's such and such a size. It's not operable. It doesn't respond well to treatment." We found a surgeon who said, "I think I can get it out." And so my hopes were lifted. The day my father was to have a lung removed, he's on the bed, he's hooked up to IVs, the gurney is there to take him to the operating room, and the doctor walks in and says, "I'm sorry. I have looked and looked and looked at these x-rays. I've had other people look at them. I simply cannot do this." And so my hopes were shattered again. We found a man who thought he could treat it chemically, and he did, and the results were excellent. In fact, we thought the tumor had disappeared. And so again, my hopes were revived, and I thought that my father had won the battle. But probably some 6 months or so later, the cancer came back with a vengeance. And they said, "There's no sense in treating it any longer. All we'd be doing would be torturing you because it's not going to respond anymore." And so you have to deal with those kinds of emotions and those kinds of ups and downs. But I think it's essential that we do that. And I think it's essential that we be honest enough with ourselves to admit, okay, they are terminally ill. Now, what can I do now that I've admitted that? In dealing with the terminally ill, it's important, in my thinking, that they have a significant voice in what kind of treatment they pursue. Now, I'm assuming that the person is an adult. I'm assuming that they are one who's old enough and in a frame of mind to make those kinds of decisions. And the reason I include this is because it can be very difficult, especially for family members, to allow them to pursue the kind of treatment they want. And it's difficult because many times our love for them is so strong that we cannot bear the thought that we might lose them to this disease. And so many times we want them to take the most aggressive approach. Many times we want them to even become involved in experimental approaches. And I believe that if we could find it within ourselves to be honest, we would have to admit it's because we can't stand to think about our world without them in it. And it's not so much our concern, I'm afraid, for their well-being and for the quality of life they may have, but many times I believe that we encourage and almost push them into certain types of treatment because we simply cannot stand the thoughts of not having them in our world anymore. But I believe genuinely that one of the most loving things you can do for someone with terminal illness is to assure them that you will stand behind any decision that they make that is right and moral. I'm not talking about suicide or assisted death or anything like that. but just assuring them that you will stand behind them and support whatever decisions they make in the treatment of this disease, even if it's not the route that you would like them to take. The one who's battling this disease must have, in my thinking, the right to choose how they want to deal with their illness. A young lady at Berwickville who battled cancer for some 6 or 7 years took a very aggressive approach to her cancer, to the point that she went to the Bahamas for experimental treatment. I helped raise money to pay for her medical bills, and I believe they helped her. I believe they extended her life a few years by the treatments they were able to render to her. When it came time for my father, we talked about it. Dad had had other friends who had battled cancer, some with lung cancer. And Dad and I talked about it, and Dad says, "Steve, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find me a good lung doctor. I'm going to find me a good surgeon. I'm going to find me a good cancer doctor. And I'm going to do what these men tell me to do." And that's the extent of it. I'm not traipsing all over the country. I'm not traipsing all over the world. I'm going to find 3 men that I have confidence in, and I'm going to do what they tell me to do. I did some investigating on my own, found some other doctors that had some different ideas, and talked to Dad about it, and Dad said, "Steve, I don't want to do that. I'm not prepared to do that." And I accepted that. It was hard sometimes, but I accepted that because I knew the route that Dad wanted to go, and I did my best to allow him that privilege to choose to a great degree how he would deal with his cancer. In dealing with the terminally ill, you must be prepared to answer some difficult questions. Questions dealing with, why is this happening to me? Am I being punished? Does God not hear my prayers? Is it that I don't have enough faith? And questions like that can be very common. And beloved, I feel that it's very important that we give Bible answers where Bible answers can be found. And sometimes it might be even good to learn to ask questions. You know, if someone says, "Am I being punished by God?" you might want to ask, "Is there some reason that you think God ought to be punishing you?" And if they say no, then I would say, well, then my response would be, "No, he's not." But sometimes there may be something that they need to talk about, something that they need to work through, something that's not been in their life as it ought to be, and they need to deal with that, and they want to deal with that, and they're hoping for you to give them a chance to deal with that. Where Bible answers can be found, we need to provide Bible answers. But brethren, again, very strongly, let me suggest that when Bible answers can't be found, don't answer the question. I believe we have done so much harm at times when we start trying to guess why a person has come down with some kind of a disease and try to make sense out of it, or try to make logical reason out of it, when no clear reason is known. I've heard some things said over the years that have just stunned me and caused me to shudder at what caring people, and I don't mean that they were trying to be unkind, but what caring people have said when they really didn't know what they were talking about. I had a woman in the presence of her young son tell me about her husband who had died from a terminal illness. And the young son could not have been more than 9 or 10 years old. And in front of her young son, she said, "It was hard for me to accept, but finally I just had to admit that if God did not want me to have a husband and did not want my son to have a father, that's just the way it had to be." And my thoughts were, if this young man does not grow up hating God, I will wonder why. I will wonder why. A man at Berwickville who died at a very young age of cancer. His wife became unfaithful. His 2 daughters became unfaithful. And I don't know how many times I heard brethren say, "Oh, God took him to spare him having to watch his family become unfaithful." And I'm thinking, had he been here, it probably wouldn't have happened, because he was very faithful and he was leading his family in the way they needed to go. But you see, we attribute so many things to God that we don't really know. And I think we do more harm when we try to answer questions that no answers are given for than we do good. Now, this may not be exactly the place this ought to fit in this lesson, but also let me suggest that in talking with the terminally ill, be very careful about promising certain things. If you're like me, and I go to somebody's home or I go to the hospital and they've just received terrible news, the first thing I want to do is just kind of hug them and say, listen, it's going to be okay. But that may not be the truth at all. And we need to be very careful about assuring people that it's going to be okay. We need to be very careful about promising people that they're going to win this battle or that they're going to get through this successfully. And by that I mean living. We just need to be very careful in the way we answer questions. If there's a Bible answer, by all means, give it. But where God has not spoken, let's be very careful how we answer. I think it's important in facing terminal illness and in dealing with the terminally ill that you not be afraid to talk with the person about their disease. In most cases that I've been involved in, the patient wanted to know what was going on. They wanted to know what the doctors were saying about their progress, about their chances of survival. They wanted to know any other related matters that affected their condition. And I personally believe they have every right to be informed if they want to be informed. And my experience has been that most people appreciate the honesty and most people appreciate being able to be involved in decisions that affect them. We were caring for my father at home the last several weeks of his life, and my mother and I and one of his nurses were all in the same room that Dad was in, and my mother, who doesn't whisper very well, was trying to whisper to this nurse. The nurse became aware that, you know, Mom wasn't whispering very well, and she said, Mrs. Snyder, why don't we step in this other room? I need to check some of Jake's medicine. And so when she left the room, Dad looked at me and he said, Steve, why are you all whispering? And I kind of grinned and I said, well, Dad, Mom thinks you're depressed. And she was asking the nurse, did she have any medicine for your depression? And Dad kind of grinned, and you have to appreciate Dad and I, but Dad kind of grinned. He said, well, Steve, I'm dying. How do you think I ought to feel? And I laughed and I said, well, Dad, I'm just guessing that it's not making you real happy at this point. And we laughed and he said very seriously, though, he said, Steve, I know I'm dying. Don't hide things from me. Tell me what's going on. I want to know. And I promised him, Dad, anything I know, you'll know. Nothing will be kept from you that I know. But you see, he wanted to know. Don't hide things from me. Don't whisper. Don't talk about me like I'm not here. Let me know what's going on. I'd encourage you not to be afraid to ask people that you're dealing with to explain to you what the doctors are doing or what they're saying. Don't do it in a prying manner, but simply to show that you're concerned and that you're willing to let them talk about it anytime they need to talk about it. Now, be very careful. I never allow myself to get into a position of where I'm making decisions for them. This young lady from Berryville that battled cancer for 7 years had many operations, had a tumor removed from her brain, from her back, from her lung, from her shoulder, just had a number of operations. And on two or three occasions, she would call me and she'd say, Steve, I need you to come to the house now. And I'd go down and she said, Steve, I just came from the doctor and he wants to do surgery again. I need you to tell me what to do. And I'd say, well, what are your options here? Well, he said he could do surgery, or he said he could treat it with chemicals, but he said the surgery would be the most effective means of dealing with it. Well, what is it you're wanting to do? Are you wanting to treat this aggressively, or are you wanting to be a little more cautious? What? And I would talk to her, and finally she would make her decision, but I never allow myself to get into the position where I'm making decisions for them. I try to help them weigh the opportunities, their options, what the consequences will be with certain options, but then I let them make up their own mind. Now, when you're asking someone about their condition, always be sensitive to the fact that they may not want to talk about it. I said this to someone in talking about this lesson, and they said, well, you need to point out, and this isn't in the manuscript, you might want to point out how you know that. And I've never really given it much thought, but here are a couple of suggestions. You know, if you go in and you ask a patient, you know, what's the doctor saying and what's the reports, and they immediately kind of turn away from you, or maybe they show some facial expression, maybe just biting their lip or something that shows you that you have said something that obviously has created a lot of pain and hurt in them, you may just want to back off and leave that alone for a while. You may want to watch the reaction of other family members. You may go in and say, listen, what's the doctor saying? And you may glance at a family member and they may give you a little nod or something to indicate this isn't the time to talk about that right now. If the patient tells you they really haven't said much yet, that may be their indication that they're not wanting to talk about it yet. And so just be aware that I think it's good to ask about it, but always be sensitive to the fact that maybe they're not wanting to talk about it. I'm going to have to move. I'm taking too much time. In dealing with the terminally ill, continue to treat the person in the same way you've always treated them. Now, again, that's assuming you've been treating them right. If you've been mistreating them, I'd suggest you stop that. But if you've been treating them in a manner that's right and good, continue that. If it was your custom to joke with them and pick at them a little, continue to do so. Most people that I've dealt with don't like people who come to see them and act as though they're dead already. My father loves to talk. That's hard for me to, and knowing that, you'll wonder how I could be a son, because I hate to talk, of course. But my father loved to talk. But with his lung cancer, if he talked too much, he would get to coughing. And that would cause him serious, serious problems. And so one day, there were several people at the house, and Dad was talking too much. And I said very kindly, Dad, you just need to be a little more quiet. I said, won't you let us talk, and you just listen? I said, you're going to start coughing, and then you're going to really feel bad. And he said, nah. He said, talking just makes you better. Talking will make you live long. And I looked at him, I said, Dad, if talking would make you live long, you would never die. Of course, the people there were kind of shocked that I said that to him. And Dad, just as straight-faced as he could, he said, you shouldn't talk to a sick man like that. And I looked at him and said, listen, if you want sympathy, go somewhere else because you're not getting it from me. Well, that was important that Dad and I kept up that kind of banter. It was important to Dad that we could still joke and laugh and enjoy the kinds of things that we had always enjoyed in life. When you're dealing with terminally ill people, treat them like you've always treated them as long as that's possible. In dealing with the terminally ill, allow them to do as much for themselves as they possibly can. Again, most of the patients I've dealt with have resented people who tried to treat them as invalids before they actually became invalids. They resent people who try to do things for them that they can still do themselves. Now, it may take them a lot longer to do some of the things that they've always done. They may have to do it in hitches, resting every now and then before they can get it done. It may tire them out, and we may hate to see them that tired. But I believe with all of my heart that it allows them to feel useful and alive, and I believe it's essential to their mental well-being that they continue to do for themselves everything they can and everything they want to do. I got a call from one of my family members one day. Dad was out cutting the grass, and he'd gotten a lawnmower in some kind of a bind. And somebody called and said, Steve, you need to get up there. Your dad's cutting the grass and the lawnmower's hung up, riding lawnmower, and he's going to hurt himself and you need to get up there and stop it. So I rush up there, and when I get up there, Dad's just putting around the yard, just big as you please. And so I didn't even tell him anybody called. I said, well, Dad, what are you doing? Oh, just cutting the grass. Well, how's it going? Oh, I got it hung up, but I got it out. I'm fine. I said, okay, and I left. I wouldn't go stop him. I would ask Dad to come and tinker on my car, tinker on my motorcycle every now and then. And sometimes he would shake so bad that it was all he could do to even tinker. And I think some of my family probably thought that it was wrong of me to ask him to do that. But I don't, because it made Dad feel good. It made Dad feel useful. And it made Dad think that he's still a part of our lives and the things that he'd always done for us. In dealing with the terminally ill, as best you can, try to put yourself in their place. I've watched family members get angry with someone terminally ill because they would not eat, or they would not drink, or they would not get up and try to walk a little. And while all of those things might be important for good health, try to remember you're dealing with someone who's terminally ill, and it may be a terrible burden to them. This young lady I've been telling you about called me, and she said, Steve, please come down. And I went down, and she was crying. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, oh, my husband just got all over me. And I said, what's the problem? She said, I can't eat. I can't even swallow. She'd been taking treatments for some cancer in here, and it had burned her throat and esophagus terribly. She couldn't even swallow. And he was trying to get her to eat, and she said, I can't. And he got so mad, he said, well, why don't you just die then? Why don't you just go ahead and die? You won't try to help yourself. Why don't you just die? And she said, Steve, I don't want to die, but I can't eat. I went out and talked with him, didn't even let him know that she talked to me, but I went out and talked with him, and he felt terrible about what he said. But the irony of this is, a few weeks after she died, he came down with a terrible, terrible cold and a terrible sore throat. And I stopped in the same, and he was beside himself. He said, Steve, I can't swallow. I can't eat. My throat hurts so bad. And he said, I can't even imagine how my wife's throat must have hurt when I got mad at her for not eating and drinking. Try if you can, and that's hard, but try if you can to put yourself in their place and try to understand how difficult it must be for them to do even some of the simple things of life. I tried one day to get my father to take a walk with me, a beautiful day outside. I said, Dad, let's go for a walk. He said, Steve, I can't. I said, I'll help you. We'll go slow. He said, you don't understand. I can't walk across the room, let alone around the block. And I knew that. I knew that. But you see, it was something I wanted him to do. And I had to accept the fact. He can't. He can't. In dealing with the terminally ill, and if there was an area of importance, this would be the most important. In dealing with the terminally ill, look for opportunities to talk with him about eternity. If the person is a Christian, remind them of the great promises that our Lord and other inspired writers made concerning the future of those who die in Christ. I am the resurrection and the life. Jesus said in John 14 that he's going to prepare a place for us. Paul said in Romans 8:18 that the sufferings of this life are not even worthy to be compared with the glory that will be ours when this life is over as Christians. And so many other passages that should offer great comfort to a Christian. One of the things that my father and I talked about was the truth that regardless of the outcome, he could not lose because he was a Christian. And I told Dad, I said, Dad, if you beat the cancer, you're a winner. If the cancer beats you, you're still a winner. You can't lose in this battle. And he believed that, and I believe lived that all of his life. If the person is not a Christian, you need to try and lovingly and gently talk with them about their need to get ready. Look for opportunities to do that. One man I was visiting said, Steve, I don't like the odds they're giving me. And I said, well, I can help you improve the odds. And we talked about Christ. Another man that I visited said recently, he said, I need to get out of this hospital. I've got some things to take care of. And I knew this man had a background of family members in the church. And he said, Steve, I've got to get out of this hospital. I'm seriously ill, and I'm going to die, and I've got things I need to take care of at home. And I said, you've got something else you need to take care of. You know the truth. Your parents took you to services when you were little. You need to get your life right with God. And he did. He did. Now, that's difficult for me. I don't find that easy at all to say those kinds of things. And sometimes, it's been my practice to try to find a time when no one else is around, or even to tell the family, especially if the family's Christian and this person is not, to tell the family, next time I come, how about you leaving the room and let me have some time with them alone so that no one's embarrassed and I can just talk to them privately about some things that are very important. Quickly, in dealing with the terminally ill, keep in mind the other members of the family. Look for ways to help. We're good at saying, is there anything I can do? And families are good at saying, no, I can't think of anything. Just learn to find things that you can do. Clean the house, buy groceries, cook a meal, give them some money. Until you deal with this, it's hard to imagine how much money you can spend being at the hospital every day. And sometimes it's nice if somebody just comes up and hands you some money to help you with those expenses. In dealing with the terminally ill, families need to decide whether or not the person will be kept at home or in some facility. My father hated the hospital. He was having a blood transfusion one evening, and they didn't get through until about 11:30 at night, and they had to put him in the hospital. My mother had gone home to take care of some things, and Dad called and said, I'm done. And she said, well, why don't you just spend the night? You've paid for the room. Why don't you just rest and spend the night? He said, you either come get me or I'm walking home. He wasn't going to stay in the hospital. He hated hospitals. We chose to bring Dad home. If you do that, let me suggest that you check into an organization called Hospice. Now, it's very important that you understand the philosophy of hospice. When hospice takes a person, that person has been told by the doctors that they have less than 6 months to live. And hospice is not an organization intended to try to take heroic efforts to keep them alive. Hospice is an organization to let people die at home with some dignity. I recommend the organization, but you do need to understand the philosophy. In dealing with the terminally ill, be willing to talk with them about their funeral. I've always appreciated people who would talk to me about their funerals, especially if I was going to preach it, because it helped me out a lot. Don't be afraid to do that. In dealing with the terminally ill, make time. And if you're reading the manuscript, it says again in parentheses, make time. That's not a typo. I meant to say that twice. Make time to talk with them about anything that's important to you. I almost missed a chance to tell the man who has influenced me more than any human in this world how much I loved him and how I felt about him. Now, he knew that. Don't misunderstand me. My father was not ashamed to say he loved me, and I was not ashamed to tell my father that I loved him. But I almost missed the opportunity to remind him of what a great father he'd been to me and what a great example of life he had been to me. I left one morning after spending a few hours in the morning with him to take care of some other things, and we almost lost him during the time I was away. And I'm so grateful that his life was spared and that I was given the chance to tell him how much I loved him and admired him and what he had meant to me as a father, because it's a memory that I would cherish as long as I live. And I would have hated it had I not gotten the opportunity to tell him so. In dealing with the terminally ill, I believe it can be important to have someone that you can talk to about anything that's on your mind, whether it be feelings of selfishness, anger, frustration. Not someone who's going to tell you that those feelings are wrong and why you shouldn't be harboring them, but someone who will listen and understand that you have those feelings and let you express those feelings. Now, this may sound horrible to some of you this morning, but one time early in the morning, about 4 o'clock, my father just sat up straight in bed and could not breathe at all. And in order to get his breath, he had to be almost straight up. And I got behind him in the bed, and I held him up and tried to relax him enough that he could breathe. And in all honesty, I was thinking, I wish, Dad, you would just die. I wish you could just die. You see, I needed to tell someone that. And someone who would not look at me and think, you got to be the cruelest, most heartless son in this world. But someone who would understand how hard it was to watch him not be able to get a breath, and how much better it would be if he could just pass on to the next realm. These are just a few things that were very important to me. I hope that in some way they've helped you, and I hope that as you look at the book and the things that I've set out, that maybe you'll be able to use some of these things in your work with others who are terminally ill. There's so many other things that I wish I could talk about, but time simply won't permit it. I've already gone a little bit beyond what Emmanuel asked me to do, and I apologize for that. But again, thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for your very careful attention. And again, I hope that these things can be of some help.